Friends.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Splendid. And she has returned, not necessarily triumphant, but it was Birmingham. You see, if you'd let us know, Jessica, we could have actually put our Birmingham team, Katie Grimmison and all, to actually go and support your good self. Do you want to talk about the match, the netball sort of scenario, or do you just want to let it lie?
Yes, it was against Aston. Unfortunately, we didn't win. I can't remember the scoring. I think it was quite different. I think it was around 40 and 14. Wow. So we played really well as a team, but unfortunately
not quite well enough at this stage. Maybe you were full of the Christmas spirit. Maybe you actually wanted to just sort of enter into the Christmas spirit and say, this is what it's all about. You know, this is so you gifted the whole thing. Anyway, we just heard the voice of Rachel Abbott, which obviously is a precursor to the weather forecast. Well, it can be. Highs today 5 degrees centigrade, lows of 2 degrees centigrade. There will be some early bright spells. It'll be dry, mostly cloudy though, with some showery rain. So ideal in many ways for the Christmas market. Or maybe not. Anyway, you can obviously sort of follow that through with both Siren FM and Lincoln City Radio later on today, when we do another one of those wonderful magical joint adventures with Andrew David, Ed Wellman and Nikki Wells, actually reporting live from the official opening of the Christmas market. Will you be going with Jessica to see the Christmas market?
Oh yes, I'm planning on going this Friday actually.
Oh, tomorrow actually, in terms of time slots and all the rest of the bits and pieces. On the show today, we will be connecting with Richard Fitzwilliam. Richard, who put a fairly incendiary public relations piece in later, which suggests that maybe James Bond has passed its sell-by date. Surely not. Anyway, we'll find out about that from Richard. Plus, of course, Ian Lennox will be with us. Paul Firth will be kind of reflecting a little piece on Cyber Monday. William Sitwell should hopefully be with us. And we'll be talking about our British obsession with the weather, but in particular, kind of why we just never seem to be able to cope. I mean, do you have winter in New Zealand, Jessica?
It sometimes strikes us, I suppose.
Sometimes, yeah. So it can be a major sort of shock in every sense of the word. Anyway, Rachel Abbott, we heard her earlier introducing the show. Fine soul from On Broadcast. In fact, actually, Jessica, she'll be joining us together with her colleague Rosie from On Broadcast next Wednesday live on the Midweek Drive.
Oh,
that's great.
Great.
Connect once again the studios from that point of view. But we figured that she developed in such marvellous, wonderful ways that we thought, Rachel, let's not just, you know, you can do this interview. You can actually sort of speak with Brian Mansell all about property matters, because we might have just heard in the Chancellor of the Exchequer's recent autumn statement that he's taken off stamp duty and so on. Rachel was sent off to do a piece with property expert Brian Mansell. I think we'll probably actually just start off with a classic line. Rachel, where are you?
I'm in the studio with Brian Mansell, property expert from Your Move. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Now, buying a house, it's, you know, it's a stressful experience. In a survey for Bosch UK, it states that 84% of people polled found it stressful, while only 11% found it straightforward, with the remaining 5% finding it much easier than expected. Quite a difference in stats there.
It is.
Sellers are now outnumbering buyers.
Yeah.
Could you explain this to me?
Yeah, well, it's one of the reasons that house price growth has slowed, insofar as the number of people looking for a house is now on a more equal footing with the number of people trying to sell a house. Of course, the market over the last few years has been predominantly more buyers than sellers, hence why, with demand outstripping supply, house price have risen. So, with that number being more equal, we're in what we call more of a normal market, where whilst there is still house price growth, it's not as it's not accelerating away as it has been. So it's a really good time to buy. And from a buying perspective, there's still very low interest rates, of course, and some very good mortgage deals around to be had. So a great time to get yourself onto the property market ladder.
House prices fell by 0.2%. Could you explain that to me?
Yeah. So basically, the value of house prices, according to the Land Registry, the growth of house prices has slowed in comparison to September, when it rose by 0.3%, and in October it's risen by 0.1%. So therefore it's gone back by 0.2% in terms of growth over the last 2 months. But it is still growth.
Mm.
It's still growing.
That's good. Yeah. I'm glad. I mean, from my point of view, I'm still quite way off from it. But I would assume that, you know, if I just wanted to put a property on the market, generally, you know, in this day and age, people are looking to, you know, make it a, you know, make a big adventure with their properties.
Yep.
You know, you see these programs like Grand Designs and all this stuff. But actually, according to this study, potential buyers aren't looking necessarily for a project. In fact, They do want to look for a clean and tidy and maintained property.
Well, that's quite right, Rachel. I mean, the majority of people that are looking for homes, of course, are looking because circumstances that they are in is dictating them moving. So a larger property because of a new arrival, perhaps. And so quite often you find that the majority of buyers are looking for a home rather than a project or a house.
So all those times when they're like, don't paint those walls red.
Yeah, that's good advice.
It's good advice, isn't it? So Bosch have teamed up with Your Move estate agents.
That's right.
Like yourself.
Yep.
To come up with a top 10 list on what you can do to make your home more sellable.
Yeah.
Could we go for a list here?
Your point earlier on was very valid, is that people don't have to spend a lot of money to get a better return from their property. And so, you know, when I go out and advise people on the value of their property and things that they can do before they sell to get a good price for their property, a lot of it is small pieces of work that quite often go unnoticed whilst, you know, people are living in their own house. So, for example, our colleagues at Bosch have put together a very useful top 10 tips of you, as you've talked about. Great tip. Tip number one is making sure that you get somebody that's close to you, a friend or a relative perhaps, to come along and look at your house as if they were trying to buy it. So to give you a really objective view on sort of things that you might not see that you can do to the property to help it sell for a good price. And a lot of it is just really, really super basic stuff, you know, with a quick trip to the local DIY shop, you know, a couple of £100, even £100, you can make thousands of pounds difference to your property.
But I suppose you could also, if you're not that great at DIY, there might be some smaller options as well, just the simple things.
Yeah, so absolutely. So if you think of it like a car, if you were going to sell a car, what do? They go outside and they clean the car and they polish the car and they clear all the rubbish out of it. There's a really good starting point for a house. A house is, you know, worth thousands of pounds more than a car in most instances. So a good tidy up, a spring clean, irrespective of the fact it's not spring, is a really, really good tip. Tip number two.
I guess also it's putting the effort in, like buying a nice new piece of equipment just to kind of, when people walk in, and kind of entice them with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the old wives' tale of having freshly baked bread and fresh coffee on the go when people are coming around does actually work. You know, people, as I said before, are looking to buy a home. So if you can make it homely and warm and inviting, that's really important. But also at the same time, neat and tidy, you know, making sure your flaky paint is sanded down and repainted. The front of your property has no weeds. Your garden's neatly cut and has had the leaves raked off it.
Definitely.
All good stuff to do and quite cheap.
Now, I've got a question. Mm. When, you know, we want to do it up and everything, but I think a lot of us, we get quite, what's the word? We get quite attached to our properties.
Yep.
You know, we've got our lives, you know, in these houses. You might have lived there all your life. You might have, you know, moved in at a very, you know, important part of your life. You know, you might have just been married. You might have just divorced someone. It might be your pride and joy, and it's time to leave.
Yep.
Should that person be in the house when an estate agent comes round, or should they let go? If they're letting go anyway, should they let go and let the estate agent do the work?
That's a really, really good point. And so, you know, when somebody needs to be in the house when the estate agent comes around in terms of providing them advice on things they should do to it. But when someone is coming to look at the property, we normally advise the owners not to be in the house at the time. Because as try as they might, my experience over the last 26 years has shown that homeowners, as hard as they try to be positive, unfortunately just sometimes are so worried about buyers spotting things that they are aware of. So they tend to walk around the house with a buyer saying, excuse the mess in that room and sorry about the washing up and sorry about the mould in the bathroom and all the little things.
A typically British thing,
honesty, absolutely, which sometimes
I'd be like
is,
that.
I think...
I definitely would have to be a mile away. what about pets? What if you had a big lizard in there or something really unusual? You know how people seem to have the most unusual pets these days?
Yep. So I haven't seen very many big lizards in, what are you talking about, crocodile size?
Yeah,
are
you talking
about,
you know,
a gecko mainly?
Something unusual.
Chameleon or something.
Something that might put someone off.
Well, hopefully a lizard would be in a glass container, possibly, or a glass
cage. I'd hope so too.
When people come round, the lizard's not going to eat the children or something like that. But certainly pets, your typical dogs, your cats, and we are a nation of pet lovers. It's the same thing, really. If you're having a party and you're having friends round, and this time of year we do a lot of that at Christmas, It's the same principle, you know. If there's hairs everywhere, let's make sure they're hoovered up and dusted away. We've had some, you know, the windows are open, so any pet smells are abating before people come around to the property. And that, you know, pet toys that are often lying around are put away, you know, much the same as children's toys. And obviously, I don't know what toys lizards have,
no,
but mice probably.
That was just an example. You never know. Yeah. We're in a very creative society these days. I think people are a lot more outgoing with
pets.
Pets.
Yeah, definitely.
but Brian, have you had any interesting experiences when you've walked into a property? What be the biggest no?
Well, I mean, interesting experiences. Yeah, I mean, I've had to avoid a rather large tarantula running across the carpet once when I was providing somebody with a house valuation. Their pet tarantula, Tiny, which was the size of probably two hands, was running around the carpet freely, which was a rather worrying time. But the biggest no is what we're talking about here is just, you know, have somebody that you trust to come round, look at your property and give you some, you know, some good ideas about the things that you can do that you might have missed. Mm. Or alternatively, other good advice is to actually go out. If you're thinking of selling your home, go out and have a look at other people's properties that you'll be competing with. And then you'll get some really good ideas of the competition, of what your home needs to be presented like to make sure it's better presented than the other
ones. That's one of the main messages today, is that if sellers are outnumbered by buyers, you know, you have to stand out. And if it means getting some new appliances, some new paint on the wall, then do it.
Yeah, hosing, you know, getting your pressure washer onto your decking or onto your patio, getting rid of the mildew and the weeds from your back garden, make sure the leaves are gone, the grass is cut. But the front of the house is a very important part, because of course that's the piece that gets photographed the most, and also the bit that the buyers can come along at any time they want to and look at the front of your property. They can't always come in the back or look inside your home if you're not there, but they can look at the front of it. So the front is the first impression and the really important bit.
Cool. And do you personally, do you think this will change soon? Do you think almost there'll be more buyers than sellers?
Well, I mean, what we expect is that the property market is cyclical over the years. You tend to find that the first half of the year there tends to be more buyers than sellers, and then the numbers even themselves out, as we're talking about today, at the back end of the year. So I'm expecting that with 2015, you know, we will see a normal market with perhaps not as many buyers as there have been in the past, but certainly more buyers than sellers.
Perfect. Well, it's been lovely speaking with you today, Brian. Just a quick one.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a quick one, though. Where can we go for some more information?
OK, well, some helpful hints and tips about selling your property. You're welcome to visit your-move.co.uk. And, of course, for advice on power tools and the right tools for the job, then certainly visiting Bosch's website page in the UK is a very sensible thing to do.
Excellent.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Rachel, for that, because I think it's fair to say, Jessica, that Rachel probably came up with the question of the year there. What if there's a giant lizard? What if there is a giant lizard? You know, I mean, any interview. I mean, I'm sure Richard Fitzwilliams will be thinking, yeah, next time I'm doing an interview for the press, I'm going to slip that question in there. So what if there's a giant lizard in your house? Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Just what I was thinking.
Exactly. It's true. Rachel is one of the On Broadcast team. She'll be joining us again on the show next Wednesday, together with Rosie as well. Rosie Tratt, in fact. So great stuff there. Now, we've heard his dulcet tones there. Jessica, you've read the scintillating script that was Bond 24, the world's movie's most winning formula announcement that was made about the latest sort of Bond. But do we need James Bond?
Do we need James Bond? Well, depends. Depends how you look at it.
Depends? Depends? How can you be a Bond girl with that attitude? Honestly, Jessica. Richard, was this tongue-in-cheek somewhat? I mean, Bond raises the profile of Britain. He makes us feel good about ourselves. Clearly, we punch above our weight. Well, of course, we haven't got the Empire. We had that 100 years ago. We don't have that now.
But we saved the world, and Bond is, I mean, as a cinema franchise, if you look at the money, it's some $6 billion, it's been calculated, that the Bond films have made. And the announcement at Pinewood Studios at 11 o'clock this morning will be the cast. We've got a pretty good idea who most of them are going to be, and the title of the next Bond movie. And it is somewhat earth-shaking, because the facts simply are, and I admit I'm a skeptic turned admirer.
There we are. Yes,
Bond
exactly.
Fascinates. We need Bond. I mean, Bond escorted Her Majesty the Queen.
Bond is back, and Olympic back with a bang.
Opening ceremony. I mean, that was unforgettable. So he's really got, in my opinion, to have a movie that, coming up, that isn't like Quantum of Solace and is much more like Casino Royale and Skyfall, an improvement on both.
So, Jessica, big question here. Have you ever seen a James Bond movie?
Of course. I've seen it's quite good.
Well, that's great, because there are a number of people of your generation who still claim, never seen it at all.
I doubt there are many.
I have to admit, I haven't seen Skyfall yet. Oh. I'm sorry.
Skyfall is worth seeing, and I mean, it was a terrific success at the box office, of course. I mean, that was always going to be the case. But on the other hand, two Oscars. I mean, this is very, very unusual. This is what the Bond films have been wanting to do all along. That's why they've got director Sam Mendes, American Beauty, Road to Perdition. Remarkable.
Well, you see, it's
and Janet Daniel Craig. You couldn't have a better Bond than Craig, in my view.
Well, there we are. You see, many people would actually say Timothy Dalton was a brave stab at the whole thing.
Brave stab is not enough.
Steady on, Richard. Steady on.
You had Sean Connery. I mean, it was marvellous. But then Roger Moore's movies were as geriatric as his character.
Oh, please. Now, come on now. You know, please. You know, I've got A View to a Kill lined up, all ready to play. It's either that or Skyfall. But anyway, let us move on. What else would you like to share with us today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, a very important film, at least I think it's a movie that it really gives you an idea of what it was like in Afghanistan for our troops. It's Kanjaki, and it is directed by Paul Katus, and it is the story of a unit of soldiers, mostly from the parachute regiment. This is 2006. They're in Helmand. They're near a strategically important dam, and several of them set out on patrol searching for Taliban snipers, and one of the soldiers steps on a mine, and this blows off one of his legs. This was a famous rescue mission led by Corporal Mark Wright, and it's a very, very fine performance that we have from all the actors here. There's no doubt whatsoever that this is a movie that it's authentic and it's tough, and it's a minefield, an unmarked minefield that they stepped into, and this is where the tension mounts in this film, as their bodies get black and their tongues parched, and frankly, more minds start exploding. It is a searing experience to see this movie. The movie doesn't ask why we're in Afghanistan, but it does show the courage of those who serve, and for that, and the fact that it does so without flag waving, but it's a tough, gritty, powerful movie, and it's well scripted. It deserves kudos for that. Screenplay, Tony Williams, and a very, very good one.
So, Jessica, Kajaki, is it the sort of thing? I mean, it seems a little bit sort of heavy for the festive season of Goodwill to All Men and all that, but, you know, will you be heading off to see Kajaki?
It definitely sounds like more my thing. I might actually pop off to see it with my dad when I get back.
An impressive war movie with questions and ballistic grit, according to The Guardian. It's interesting. As you rightly said, Richard, a company of young British soldiers encounter an unexpected, terrifying enemy, a dried-out riverbed, and under every step, the possibility of death.
This is the fact they sustain the tension so well throughout this movie. I mean, it really is realistic. You're thinking the Hurt Locker level, you're thinking Restrepo, which was a documentary set in part of Afghanistan, powerful movie. You're not thinking one of these movies set in a war zone, which is polemical. What it's depicting, as I say, it doesn't explain why we're in Afghanistan, but it's certainly full of first-class performances, and heroism, this dry sense of humor. It's well established also at the beginning, because you see their camp, and then subsequently there is this fateful journey to the, and they get trapped, and what happens? It really is a gut-wrenching experience.
Kajaki, The True Story, to give it its full title. But you never know. I mean, these days, do people care about colons? I don't know. Maybe it's a sort of grammar tradition. And how will the colon sit on the marquee? We don't know. Richard, from Bond to Kajaki.
And then to The Greatest. Now, this is a movie I really enjoyed. I Am Ali. It's a documentary about the one and only. And there is...
Does he float like a butterfly? Does he sting like a bee?
He does. You see, that one of the things that brings this movie alive, it reminded me of the fact that it had been quite a long time since I'd actually seen documentary footage of Ali himself. And there's plenty of it here. He speaks like no other. And also they're very charming touches because they're audio. We hear of Ali talking with his children. There are family interviews, interviews with his friends. The movie is hagiographic. I mean, frankly, no one can speak about Ali better than Ali himself, so it's not necessary, really, for some of the friends to be quite so hyperbolic, because the man is like no other, and especially with one of his daughters. They're very, very touching interviews and also insights into his life, and there's some very, very funny parts in this movie. I didn't realize Tom Jones went on a visit to Ali's training camp, and there was a mock fight between them. And many believed that Ali, appearing to be knocked down, being taunted by Jones, was actually a real life incident. Apparently, it was just, of course, done as a joke. That's one of the insights that you get. There are stories also, a tribute by George Foreman, and also by the son of Joe Frazier, who had this, as Foreman did, battle with
Rumble in the Jungle.
Yes, and obviously, there's no question.
And
No Love Lost.
Pray tell, Richard, does Michael Parkinson put in a cameo appearance?
No appearance by Parkinson.
Because it's a classic interview with Muhammad Ali. Now, there are a number of things. Now, let's just get the title right for this, because otherwise you could be going off to all sorts of things. In fact, I Am the Greatest is also the third album from Irish rock band A House. And you don't want to sort of be...
I Am Ali is the title.
Directed
by and written by Claire Lewis. And it's well worth seeing.
There you go. You know, and, I mean, last week, of course, we were covering Paddington and all sorts of things. Now, of course, it's I Am Ali, which is indeed, yes, well put together, well structured, and unprecedented access to Muhammad Ali's personal archive of audio journals. Bless you, Jessica.
Thank you.
She works through the whole thing.
It's wonderful to see someone as outrageous as Ali was. And, I mean, there's no question about it. A fighter like that, and also the tribute, it's a fabulous
thing. He's still with us, and of course there was the classic tune that, if I recall at the time, had a kind of reggae beat which says, "I'm Muhammad, Muhammad Ali, I float like a butterfly and sting like a bee." I won't go any further, because it's too early.
May we switch to...
Go on, carry on.
A second documentary, director Randall Wright's insights into Hockney, as Hockney most particularly into his private life, but also how that impacted on our body of work, which is just phenomenal. I mean, had the film been twice as long, it would perhaps have begun to do his work justice. It concentrates most particularly on...
This is David Hockney, I presume.
David Hockney. Who else could it be? Voted, I have to say, our most significant artist, and there's no doubt a remarkable figure. I saw his exhibition at the Royal Academy, the entire Academy ground floor given over to his work relatively recently, and this gives you an idea of what happened when he left the Royal College of Art, went to New York, subsequently those famous images in California, and paintings, that of his parents, or Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy, indeed scenes picturing male nudes, which at that time were considered very controversial. And you do get an insight into Hockney's life and views, and also his sexuality, and also how AIDS devastated the bohemian scene when it struck. Little doubt that this is a very interesting movie, and full of, for example, a scene where Hockney's father tries to stop him smoking. I mean, as we know, Hockney is a lifelong smoker, and it's very funny. So you get you get insights. It could have been double the length. You do get insights into an artist who, little doubt, one of our greatest, very, very productive, in my view, certain artists.
He's from Yorkshire. What's not to say? You know, born in Bradford, I believe, and then living in Bridlington. So marvellous stuff there. And the title of the movie once again is
Hockney.
Is that all? All right, just Hockney. Okay. Well, we could watch an exclusive clip, I suppose, from Hockney, which that sounds great stuff. Well, Jessica, where would you actually go? Is it I Am Ali? Is it Kajaki? Is it Hockney? what sort of aspect would you actually be sort of saying, yeah, that's what Richard has persuaded me using his loquaciousness to actually go off and check out this week? Or will it be a case of, no, I'm just waiting for more Bond?
Well, I definitely like the sound of Kanjaki. I don't know, I've always loved the kind of war aspect and seeing how people cope.
She wants to be a war reporter, Richard. I'm trying to persuade her that there are safer things to do, like location reports on Madrid Drive.
Safe things in this world, but Kajaki will show you how what should have just been an ordinary reconnoitering expedition could turn into a hell on earth. And as I say, when I use the word gut wrenching, you feel for the soldiers trapped in a situation that's quite literally liable to be explosive. I mean, this is a tough movie. It's very well made, and tributes here to all the cast and the way it's handled, because you don't normally get movies like this. Usually there's an anti-war message. In this case, it's implicit if you wish to read it in that way, but there's no gratuitous flag waving. It's as it must have been.
It looks as though Kajaki has actually sort of got the number one thing. I was just looking at a little story that's featured in the Hockney movie, the true story behind Hockney's unfinished painting of George Lawson. Lawson, apparently sitting by the piano, he was playing A-flat, and he wanted to call the painting A-flat. Oh, well, never mind. It's life in its own sort of unique,
well,
inimitable
life. I mean, it's a fascinating life.
And still continues to be, obviously.
Yes,
so there we are.
He does admit in the film there's a sad fact that we are aware that he is very deaf and that restricts him socially. But one of the things that, and this is where the movie's emphasis goes, that what has been such an influence in his life are his friends. And he can look back to the 60s, and in fact, of course, you do get some elderly, a large number of elderly individuals who remember him and remember that time. But it's pretty vividly brought to life. I could have done, as I say, with a much longer movie, but you've got to be aware that there's only a certain length of time that people are going to want to watch a documentary. I'd have loved another hour about his work, but there it is, because I am an admirer, but he's had his ups and downs. I mean, some of his watercolours aren't as strong as some of his oils and so on, but equally one would make the point, and the film only briefly shows this, that he's still experimenting with the digital.
Amazing. 29 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock, as far as Lincoln time is actually concerned, and you know, we've just moved into David Hockney and A-flat. Wonderful thing. George Lawson, nearly Freudian slip there. George Lawson and Wayne Sleep. What do you make of that particular image, Jessica?
I really like its simpleness. It's quite
stark, you say?
Yeah.
No lizards there at all.
No, lizards.
There's the lizards. Sorry, Rachel. Well, it's a big lizard. Fantastic. Richard, it's looking less likely, tragically, that we'll be able to get down to catch up with you pre-London.
Are you sure? Because I just say something about the London lights try and lure you? If you go into Bond Street, you'll see them in the form of peacock feathers, and when you come to a traffic light, the feathers have this wonderful floodlit spray.
Mm.
I mean, Chelsea has...
Do you know, yes, but last night, Richard, we were actually...
Lower Regent Street, you've got... Well, it's not a film I'm going to see, but I mean, again, it is very, very pretty. We've got globes again.
There's nothing wrong with a night at the museum. It's got its own particular style, so there we are. Robin Williams did some of his finest work in that particular movie series, and don't get me started on Adam Sandler. But in terms of the whole sort of sequence, last night we were actually featuring Kate from the Los Angeles Greater Zoo Association, and she was saying they've got a whole range of illuminated monkeys that actually sort of guide you through the zoo. So, you know, it's... But mind you, we're probably not getting to Los Angeles either. And Jessica said she's heading back to the Isle of Man in a couple of weeks' time. So it's, we'll have to earmark this for next time. But we will see
you
in January.
There are the shop windows. I could perhaps attempt to tempt you with a Harvey Nichols.
Actually, I'm probably more of a Hamlin's toy person. It's the inner child in me, but there we are. Life continues.
Harrods, by the way, this year, they concentrate on mice in Harrods.
Mice? Mice?
The adventures of the mice at Christmas.
I'll tear those mices to pieces. What are we doing mice in Harrods, please?
The mice are in the window. And, you see how the mice celebrate Christmas. There's also Is Father Christmas the Radio, to be perfectly honest. There are parts of it which are quite traditional, but it doesn't work quite as well. And I've got to think back a few years ago where they had that fantastic Christmas window which featured Casino Royale. I mean, now that worked, that really worked a treat. And it's not as good as that, but you go to Harvey Nixon, you'll see the fabulous woodland creatures in this beautifully lit, shimmering forest. That should tempt you.
Well, there we are. You speak with usual sort of... We'll think about it. We'll have a chat sort of post-show and connect a few other bits and pieces. Jessica, would you like to bowl those last two questions down the line to Richard Fitzwilliams before people say... It's so much good stuff. We can't take any more. We need to find out more about the Lincoln Christmas Market. So over to you, Jessica.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I've enjoyed it enormously, but I failed to be persuasive.
Oh.
There's such a thing as failure, just reappraising oneself, you know, which we'll see in a few moments.
And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
Well, I do hope so, because we've got to talk next week about The Hobbit.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited for that.
All of the five armies.
New Zealand. I wonder, Jessica, would you have been so excited if it was Skippy the Bush Kangaroo? Probably not.
No, unfortunately.
That's very true. Christopher Walken, Tanya Roberts, Duran Duran, and Roger Moore. What a view to a kill.